Hello, and thank you, everyone. I notice that there's a lot of green going on in the room. Is that something Pal Talk did because today is Christmas Eve? I see a lot of the names are in green. I don't remember them being that green before. Yeah, lots of green going on today. So happy Christmas Eve, everyone. Yeah, I guess I don't have anything to say about the fact that it is Christmas Eve. It is. Oh, everyone has been upgraded for the holidays. Okay, so that's why everybody is green. Well, that's nice. I think some of you probably know that I have been playing songs on my Facebook page every day of December. Today is no different. Last night before I went to bed, I knew not only the song that I was going to play, but I knew the version that I was going to play today on my Facebook page. And I actually lost a little bit of sleep over that. You guys were upgraded to Extreme and Pal Talk. I felt like this Christmas song was also upgrading to Extreme. And I wasn't sure everybody was ready for this Christmas song, at least this particular version on YouTube. And I woke up a couple times during the night thinking, oh, am I really going to do that? But every time I'd say, am I really going to do that? And we'd get this inner answer, yes, that's the song for tomorrow. So when I got up this morning, I went and posted the song, and immediately, I started getting comments that showed that people were deeply moved by the song in the way that I think Spirit intends for us to be deeply moved. If you haven't had a chance to go to my Facebook page yet and play the song, I'm going to play it here in the room, but it's not the listening that takes us to the extreme version of the song. It's the watching of the video. This video is a video that John Lennon designed to go along with his song, Happy Christmas, War is Over. And there are a lot of violent images playing in the video while the singing of the song, while he and Yoko are singing the song. But it sends a very, very, very clear message. It really asks us, are we done yet? Are we done yet? Are we done with the judgments in our mind? Are we done with grievances, with getting annoyed with each other and angry with each other and wanting things my way and wanting people to see my point of view and wanting people to agree with my opinions, because all of that is what leads to the images that show up in this particular video. It's very, very powerful. And people, I think, are seeing it that way. No, I was concerned. My ego was obviously concerned that people would be offended by the images while listening to this favorite Christmas song. But I haven't heard anyone express offense. I think people are getting the message. So maybe later today, if you get a chance, go to my Facebook page and watch the video that John Lennon intended to go along with this song. Since we're here in Pal Talk right now, we're just going to listen to the song. Again, the name of the song is Happy Christmas, War is Over. This is just the commercial. It's for a movie. It looks pretty powerful. I don't know which movie it is yet, though. Ooh, hold on. Gosh, I kind of want to watch this commercial. It looks like it might be a good. Oh, I know what it is. It's Les Miserables. Yeah, that's what it is. Tomorrow that comes out. That'll be a great film. Okay, skipping the ad.
Happy Christmas, Coco.
Happy Christmas, Joey.
So this is Christmas. What have you done? Another year over, and a new one just begun. And so this is Christmas. I hope you have fun. That near and the dear ones.
Happy New Year. Let's hope it
so strong. The rich and the poor ones. The road is so long. And so happy Christmas. For black and for white. For yellow and red ones. Let's stop all the crime.
With a quote from Mahatma Gandhi, an eye for an eye will make us all blind. So, and of course, I put in the room with the choruses singing in the background, the children's chorus, war is over if you want it. War is over now. But that's if you want it. So that's what John Lennon put out there for each of us to consider, you know, not just to talk about, but in reality, am I done with war? And that really means for me. Like, am I done warring with my family? Am I done warring with my own thoughts? Am I done warring with traffic? Am I done warring with my coworkers? Am I done warring? Am I done warring? And of course, when everyone says yes to that, well, then war would be impossible. Today, we're going to begin with number 442 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. And before we move over there from John Lennon, why don't we just take a moment of silence? Amen. All right, so I will begin by reading quote 442, which comes from the Supreme Yoga, Yoga Vasistha, and it's right now it's in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, on page 79. It is only when the eyes are blinded by ignorance that one perceives the world of diversity. It is only when the eyes are blinded by ignorance that one perceives the world of diversity. And again, what you guys are coming into, if you haven't been following my seven steps teaching, is the middle of an inquiry that lasted for weeks. And so the inquiry continues in my journal at 4:42. The first question, what is ignorance? And the answer to that is, it's seeing and believing without questioning. That's ignorance. We had a discussion in the house this morning. Sometimes Danielle perceives herself as mean. Now, the funny thing is, there's no one else that I know that perceives Danielle as mean. But sometimes she perceives herself that way. And so what we talked about was, you know, instead of just taking that thought, I'm being mean, and believing it, starting to question it. You know, just starting to ask, am I really being mean? You know, what's truly going on with me? Is what's going on with me meanness, or is what's going on with me something else? I wasn't actually recommending a deep, deep inquiry. I was recommending what I would call a first level inquiry. But even a first level inquiry can get rid of an idea like I am mean, because the first level inquiry might show up, you know, actually I'm just feeling overwhelmed now. And therefore I'm not being mean, I'm just feeling overwhelmed. Right? That could be a possible answer to the inquiry. Now, there's a deeper inquiry that can happen from that level. But even a first-level inquiry can cause us not to accept a false belief. It can cause us to reject a false belief because we see it's not true. I'm not being mean. I'm feeling overwhelmed. It's not the same thing, right? Ignorance is seeing, or in this case, hearing a thought, seeing and believing without questioning. I mean, boom, and I take that on. And then, of course, I experience the guilt of being mean to someone who didn't deserve it, right? But that's ignorance. And that's one reason why inquiry is so important, because inquiry brings in the questioning that ends ignorance, because ignorance can only live without questioning. I believe that the way the Course words that is, that the ego thrives in the darkness. That the ego, you know, cannot abide in the light. The light comes with the questioning, the inquiry. When the question comes in, when the inquiry comes in, the awareness then comes in to look and see what the answer is to the inquiry. And when the awareness comes in, that is the light. The awareness and the light are simultaneous. And it's the inquiry that invites the awareness. Without inquiry, awareness is not invited. It remains in the dark, and the ego thrives. That's ignorance. So what is ignorance? It's seeing and believing without questioning. What is diversity? Because, you know, the quote that we read from Yoga Vasistha said, it is only when the eyes are blinded by ignorance that one perceives the world of diversity. So what is diversity? It's a collection of things that are different from one another. You know, just now when we were listening to the John Lennon song, he referred to the black, the white, the yellow, and the red, which are colors we use to designate four primary races. Of course, I didn't hear brown. I think we have five primary races, actually. So he didn't use brown. But the black, the white, the red, the yellow, and the brown. That's diversity. Here I have a cup, a pen, a microphone, a desk, a book, a magnifying glass, scissors, a phone ringing. That's diversity. And can you guys hear me? I just want to make sure nobody's calling me to tell me that they can't hear me on Pal Talk. Okay, good. So I'll ignore the phone then. All right. So what is diversity? It's a collection of things that are different from one another. Next question in the inquiry. If one believes what is seen in the world without questioning it, does one see diversity? The answer to that is yes. If I look about me, you know, I see a cup and a pen and a microphone and a book and a magnifying glass and a clock. And even when I look in the room, even though all I see are mostly green names, because I know some of you guys, I see a dove, I see a Lynn, I see a Jay, you know. I see people I know, and I know the difference between a Lynn and a Jay. You know, Lynn is the one that lives here in Pueblo. She's female. And Jay is the one that lives in Chicago who went to India and Israel with me. He's male. He's taller than her, you know. You know, I see diversity, right? Oh, did I forget to give you guys the link? I am so sorry. Thank you, Barbara. Here is the link to where I'm reading from. For those of you who want to join me in the journal, there we go. Thank you for pointing that out. So there's the link to 442. And again, if you're listening on the radio, we're at rda7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And step two. And we're on number 442. All right, so if one believes what is seen in the world without questioning it, does one see diversity? Yes, if I just believe, hi, that's Jay, hi, that's Lynn, you know, then that's what I believe, because that's, you know, that's it. That is diversity. Then the next question is, seeing and believing without questioning is? And the answer, of course, is ignorance. What is the result of seeing while this questioning is engaged? All things seen and experienced are put in one of two categories, real or unreal. When I'm involved in the inquiry process, that is all that's happening, real or unreal. And when I look at Jay and I look at Lynn and I look at Regina, with the light of this inquiry, I actually see unreal. When I look at the pen and the cup and the microphone and the book and the magnifying glass with inquiry, I see at least unconfirmed as real. To go as far as the inquiry has gone, it's unconfirmed as real. With this inquiry has not yet brought me to the point where there's an absolute seeing, a true seeing. Again, I distinguish between seeing and believing, or I even distinguish between seeing and trusting. The inquiry has not brought me to a point where I can say that I have experienced an absolute seeing that these things are unreal. But I have definitely seen that they cannot be confirmed as real. That has happened in the inquiry. So I appear to see a cup and a pen and a book and a magnifying glass and a microphone. But I understand that they're being seen through the senses, which are being noticed through thought. You know, there's so many filters in the way that they're not a direct experience, and so they cannot be confirmed as real. The same thing is true with a body or a personality. In fact, again, if we were to take, you know, either Jay or Lynn or Regina, any one of the three, and get 50 people in the room that also know that personality, and have those 50 people write down as honestly as they can, who is this person as you know them? We're not going to end up with the same person. So what is a Lynn? What is a Jay? What is a Regina? If it can't be absolutely defined in a changeless way, isn't it just imagination? Aren't people just believing their own imaginations of what it is? So the inquiry, when I look at these ideas of other people, these ideas of myself, these ideas of objects in the world, when I look at it with the inquiry, all that is happening, or at least beginning to happen, is that it's being put into two categories, real or unreal. And if it can't yet be that firmly cast, it is at least going into this can be confirmed as real and this cannot be confirmed. This is questionable. There's no proof that it's real. There's no direct experience of it as reality, right? So the next thing said in the inquiry, diversity, then, a myriad of objects and situations that seem to be different from one another, is not seen when questioning is engaged. That's a true statement, because when question is engaged, the awareness that is responding to the questioning is not saying, there's a cup, there's a pen, there's a J, there's a Lynn. That almost rhymed. It's saying, that I know is real, that cannot be confirmed as real. So we don't have myriads of different things. We only have real and cannot be confirmed as real, right? So diversity disappears, and even that level of clarity, and that is not the highest level of clarity. So the next point made in the inquiry is, questioning, then, dismantles ignorance as well as illusion, which is similar to the statement that I made at the beginning of this discussion. The inquiry invites the awareness, which is like inviting the light. And in the light, the ignorance cannot survive, because the ignorance only thrives in the absence of light, or the absence of awareness, which is also the absence of questioning. So this is the deep, important value of inquiry. Inquiry invites our own clarity to see for us. So let's scroll down and click on number 443, which is underneath the comment and reply area. And for those of you who have come in since I posted the link, I will also share the link. All right. 443 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. Creation has not taken place. It is but an appearance like the mirage. And as I've mentioned before, when Yoga Vasistha uses the word creation, he is not referring to creation in the way it's used in A Course in Miracles. In A Course in Miracles, creation is used to be synonymous with reality. Yoga Vasistha is using creation to be synonymous with form, the things we see around us, you know, the tree, the sun, the sky, the ground, the animals, the people, right? That's what he means by creation. And again, 443 says, creation has not taken place. It is but an appearance, like a mirage. All right, let's look at 443 in the journal, and I'll go ahead and post it again because a few people have popped in even since I posted it. So there we go. Number 443 in the journal, and the questioning continues. Is there reasonable logic to this flow of questioning? So now what I really have is I have the inquiry asking me if I not only trust it, it's really beyond trust, if I witness it to be fully reasonable, and by reasonable here I could put a capital R on it, you know, do I witness the inquiry to be fully reasonable, or is there something in me as this inquiry is happening? Remember, this inquiry occurred over weeks. Is there something in me that's saying, you know, this is ridiculous. These questions are twisting reality. And, you know, sometimes you might watch like a lawyer on a TV show. They call it Badger the Witness. and the questioning is not reasonable, but because the witness is required to answer, the questioning leads the witness to say that they, you know, to say that something might be true when in fact they don't believe it's true, right? It's just the questioning was unreasonable, it was badgering, and it led the witness to say something they would not otherwise say. Well, here, you know, here I've been in this inquiry now for a few weeks, and the inquiry is asking me, so what do you think of this questioning? Do you feel badgered? Do you feel that this inquiry is leading you to admit things that you don't truly agree to? Or is this questioning truly reasonable? Is this questioning inviting clarity? And my answer, after a few weeks of experience with it, says, yes, it is reasonable. I do not feel badgered. I do not feel that the questioning is confusing reality. I feel that the questioning is inviting reality. And then notice the next thing the questioning asks. The questioning may continue then. The inquiry literally asks for my permission to continue. I don't know why that amazes me, but it does. Even in this moment, I feel almost choked up with, it's not really gratitude. It's choked up with awe at the honor that the questioning is giving me. You know, the questioning is saying, if you do not want to continue, if you do not feel that this is reasonable, if you feel that this questioning that is occurring is taking you to a place that you do not want to go, the questioning will stop now. Are you willing for the questioning to continue? That's just amazing to me, the respect, the honor. Some of us have the role sometimes of being coaches, counselors, teachers. You know, and we may have someone that we're leading to a level of seeing that on their own they did not appear to be able to get. You know, our assistance is helping them to that seeing. I would hope that we show the same respect and honor. I mentioned this morning we had a discussion in our house about the idea of mean. Well, it was Jasmine, Danielle, and I were all three in this discussion. And one thing that I put forth into the discussion, you know, Jasmine, you know, she's 15. And so she uses the word mean a lot. She'll just say, oh, Mom, you're mean, you know, or, you know, this girl at school was mean, or, you know, she probably drops the word mean 20 times a day. It's just a part of her language. And so as we were discussing this idea of mean this morning and letting go of the belief in mean, one thing we discussed was not using the word anymore. In fact, we even said, you know, what about, should we have like a quarter jar, you know, where some people have these swear jars where every time you swear, you take a quarter and you throw it in the jar. Should we have a jar for every time we say mean, we throw a quarter in? And I said, but you know, Jasmine, you'd be throwing the most quarters in, so I need you to think about this. It's going to be most expensive to you. Well, as we continue this discussion a little bit of letting go of saying the word mean, Jasmine began to cry. She began to cry, and she said, Mama, you're asking me to be different than I am. She says, I don't want to have to think that hard about what words are coming out of my mouth. And I realized it's Danielle and I that have made the decision to let go of the ego, not Jasmine. And we were dragging her into this. And she doesn't want to come. So I said, Jasmine, I'm sorry, I was wrong. You have permission to use the word mean. You use the word mean as much as you want. Danielle and I, you know, are fine with that. I'm sorry. I didn't realize this was going to upset you. You know, all I could do was apologize and take it back. And as I took it back, you know, she began to get happier again. You know, it's not up to us as teachers or guides to force someone into a letting go or to force someone into a scene. It's our job as teachers or guides to help them along as far as they want to go when our assistance is needed. But if they don't want to go there, we let go. and we let them be where they want to be, even if it's not the highest way of seeing. It's the scene they choose to be at now, and they are free, and they can stay at that level of seeing for as long as they want. And here the inquiry is showing that same respect. It's asking me if I want to continue with it, if I'm willing to go further, or if I feel like I've been stretched as far as I want to go, and do I want to stop now? That's a demonstration of love. Love does not force. Love assists. But it never assists beyond what we are willing for. So the questioning may continue then? Yes. All right, so now it's going to come back. It's going to turn up the heat because I invited it to turn up the heat. You understand? All right, so here the questioning continues. By the way, if you guys don't want the heat turned up, you might as well leave the room. Just leave the room. Like they say on TV, you can always change the channel. You know, if I start going somewhere where you don't want to go, leave the room. All right? You do not have to stay and listen. All right, here we go. In a nighttime dream was a world created. And the answer to that is no. And again, my answers come through my looking, my awareness being invited in and looking. And the answer is no. A world appears in a nighttime dream, but there's nothing created. Right? There's a difference between appear and create. When I wake up, whatever world was in my nighttime dream, it's just gone. And the reason, it's not like it was there and now it's gone. The reason it's gone is because it was never actually there, right? It's gone because it was never there in the first place. It appeared to be there. It appeared. So no, a world appeared but was not created. Now the inquiry asks me, why is this said? Why did you give that answer? Because the things that appeared to exist did not exist. If something seemed to happen, it did not happen. Now, some of you, again, have been listening to my inquiry as it's been continuing. Some of you have not. So there was a dream that was had, you know, several days before this. I would have talked about it 2 or 3 weeks ago in the teaching. It was the dream where someone was in my house. I knew that there was a burglar in my house. And I went into the kitchen. I found the man there, the burglar. And in the dream, there was an intuition that said I needed to break his jaw. The funny thing is, again, in the dream, I really had no feelings of fear about the man. I had no judgment about the man. I had no thoughts. That's the funny thing about the dream, is that this wasn't a dream where I was really afraid of a burglar in my house. It's just that I knew there was a burglar. I went in the kitchen. There he was. It was very matter-of-fact the way it was happening. There was no fear in the dream. So I go into the kitchen, I find the burglar, and then I have this intuitive feeling in the dream that I have to break his jaw. Now, here's where the fear entered the dream for the first time. The fear was, I can't break his jaw. I'm not capable of that. I'm not capable of that level of violence. I'm not strong enough to overcome a man that way. And when this fear thought entered the dream, the next thing that happened in the dream was that I then knew intuitively that if intuition was asking me to do this, I could, and that I just needed to trust that I could break his jaw. So I went up to the man, and in the dream, there's no fight from the man. I went up to the man, and I put my hands, one of my hands was on the top part of his mouth, and one of my hands was against the bottom part of his mouth, and I pulled them apart until his jaw snapped. And then I woke up. And when I woke up, my very, very first thought was, that wasn't real. It didn't happen. None of that happened. There was no burglar in my house. There was no intuitive prompt telling me to break his jaw. And I did not break a jaw. None of it happened. right? So that's why I say there was no world created. None of that ever existed. It was merely a mental dream. So the things that appeared to exist did not exist. There was no burglar. There was no intuitive prompt. Even the intuitive prompt was an illusion. And if something seemed to happen, it didn't happen. I did not break anyone's jaw, right? Now, the next thing the inquiry asks, it has been seen. So the inquiry is really asking me, have you seen this for yourself, right? Because we're not replacing belief with belief here. We're looking for actual clarity that occurs within me. It has been seen that the world shares characteristics with a dream. And that's a question. The inquiry is asking me, through this inquiry thus far, have I seen that the world and a dream share more characteristics than not? And of course, if you've been following this inquiry, especially if you listened to last Monday, and if you haven't listened to last Monday, you can go to reginadonacres.com and you can listen to it. Last Monday was December 17th. Especially last Monday, we looked at how much the world and a dream have in common, how many characteristics they share. So yes, the inquiry has shown me that the world and a dream shares many, many characteristics, so many characteristics that it doesn't really make sense to say a dream is a dream, but the world is real. That doesn't even make sense when you look at how many characteristics they share. So I said, yes, it has been seen that the world shares many characteristics with a dream. In fact, the seeing that occurs with questioning sees that the body world experience cannot be clearly distinguished from a dream. So again, the whole world, the whole body-mind experience is being thrown into the bucket of cannot be confirmed. It can't be confirmed as real. Next, the inquiry asks, if both world and dream are the same matter, which is projection, projection is the matter that makes them, is there creation present in the world? If both world and dream are the same matter, which is projection, is there creation present in the world? And the answer is, Jamie wants to go outside. Hold on 1 second. The answer is no. The answer is that if, now we do have an if here that we're working with, if the world and the dream are both projection, and previous inquiry is really pointing to the fact that that may well indeed be true, again, not through belief, but through actual seeing. If they are both projection, then it is not true that the world is created. Just like there was no burglar in my house and that was seen upon awakening, this entire world would be as equally non-existent. One thing that's interesting is sometimes we have these discussions about will the world disappear? When you wake up, will the world disappear? But often when we have those discussions, we're a little bit mistaken in our premise. And that sometimes when we have those discussions, we're speaking from the premise that there is a world here now. And that the world that is here now, the question is, will this world that is here now disappear or not disappear? And people have different opinions on that. But what this inquiry is pointing out is that initial premise itself, that there is a world here now, that is mistaken. In other words, what this is really saying is, you could say, no, the world's not going to disappear. Why? Because there is no world to disappear. There's nothing here to disappear. The idea of it ceases to exist. The experience of it may disappear. But there's no actual world to disappear. Just like in the nighttime dream. It never existed, so you can't say it went away. It never actually existed, only the mental appearance of it. And this world, the inquiry is pointing, is the same. Only the mental appearance of it is present. But there is no world. So there is no world to disappear. Hi, Jasmine! If both world and dream are the same matter, which is projection, is there creation present in the world? Now, one thing we talked about last night was two types of projection that we find in the world. What we called mind projection, which you could say comes from imprints or beliefs, and intuitive projection, which does not come from imprints or beliefs or conditioning, as some people call it. Intuitive projection comes into the dream, and it's equally as unreal as everything else in the dream. But there's a slight difference about it, in that it is coming into the dream representative of reality in order to wake us up and return us to reality. Of course, in miracles, we call that the Holy Spirit. And we talked about last night how some of the intuitive projections that have shown up in the dream, as far as we know, are intuitive projections like Jesus, Ramana Maharshi, Srinivasagadatta Maharaj, Buddha, Yoga Vasistha. We can even say that books like A Course in Miracles, NTI, these are all intuitive projections, but equally unreal and equally projected. Right? So, but the inquiry then asked again is, if both the world and the dream are the same matter, which is projection, is there creation present in the world? And the answer is no. Neither the projection of mind or intuition could be called creation if the characteristics are the same as a dream. Each would have to be called appearance. And this is what I was talking about when the teaching ended last night. So we are actually making an error when we say things like Jesus is real, Ramana Maharshi is real. They're not. The wisdom that we experience as coming from them is pointing in the direction of reality. But there is nothing real in the dream. It's all equally dreamscape. And what I mentioned last night is we really help ourselves towards awakening if we can be very clear on that. In fact, I'm reaching for NTI right now, because although my clarity on this topic is obviously increasing, what's happened is that this was already stated in NTI Revelation a long, long time ago. In NTI Revelation chapter 1, the second paragraph, the world is an illusion, and so everything you experience as you let go of the world is illusion also. And then it says in italics, you are not to believe any of it. So that means that the experiences I had with inner Ramana, which I, like I said, are not explainable if you believe in the world. They're not explainable because I never knew Ramana. So how could this seeming person that I never knew anything about show up and teach me so effectively and in the same manner as that person did in history? You know, it almost makes it seem like he must be real. I couldn't have, quote, made him up. He must be real. And that's where we get confused. It's because, again, we think of ourselves as humans, and we don't realize that even the human is dreamscape. The fact that the dream was able to bring in someone I never knew about to speak to me as a guide does not make it real. It's just the creative manner in which the intuitive projection is occurring in order to get my attention, in order to get me to listen. You know, what about Gary Renard? Now, I'm not Gary Renard. I don't know Gary Renard's experience. And of course, you know, there are discussions about whether, quote, art and impersa actually happened or did not happen. And I don't even want to get involved in that discussion. But let's just say they did happen. Art and impersa happened for Gary. That's his experience. And when he speaks of it, he certainly sounds like he believes it. He speaks of it as if it occurred for him. But does that mean art and impersa are real? The answer is no. They would be intuitive projections that got his attention. There's no reality in the dream. Jesus spoke to Helen in order to scribe A Course in Miracles. Does that mean Jesus is real? No. It's an intuitive projection that got her attention. So what NTI is telling us and what the Seven Steps Inquiry is telling us is we're better off if we do not believe, because if we become attached to Jesus, attached to art and impersa, attached to Ramana, we're still being attached to something unreal. So we may be getting some of the message, but we're still clinging to the unreal. And it's better for us in awakening if we open our hands and release everything unreal. Don't hold on to any of it. But that doesn't mean it isn't still useful. So let me go back to NTI. The world is an illusion. And so everything you experience as you let go of the world is illusion also. You are not to believe any of it. But helpful symbols will be given to guide you. Remember that they are only symbols. Follow them, realizing you know not where they lead. Do not idolize anything within the world or any symbol or any thought that is sent to lead you from the world. Hold to them as they are useful, but let them go when their usefulness has passed. Now here's our job. Are you ready? You are to keep moving by letting go until you find yourself with nothing left to hold on to. All right, so back to the inquiry. Again, if both world and dream are the same matter, which is projection, is there creation present in the world? The answer, no. Neither the projection of mind or intuition could be called creation if the characteristics are the same as a dream. Each would have to be called appearance, or in the language of NTI, a symbol. Now the inquiry says there is a holding back here. So it's interesting because this inquiry, whatever the heck this inquiry is, you realize this inquiry is another dream projection, an intuitive projection. Oh, you got a nice little candle. Thank you. Are you putting this upstairs by the... It's very nice, and it won't burn the house down.
Nope.
Perfect. let's see. I forgot where I was. let me just read again. How's that? Neither the projection of mind, oh yes, I remember. Here's where I was, but I'll go ahead and read. Neither the projection of mind or intuition could be called creation if the characteristics are the same as a dream. Each would have to be called appearance, right? And then the inquiry asks, there is a holding back here. Now what's interesting is when we started, was it this inquiry? When we started this inquiry, the very first thing the inquiry asked me is there a reasonable logic, and may the question continue? And I said, yes. The inquiry itself, whatever the heck it is, the inquiry itself knew that as we went into this topic, I was going to start wanting to pull back. It knew that even before we got into it. Whatever this intelligence is, this wisdom is, it's incredibly wise. So it even asked for my permission to continue because it knew that I was going to start going, I don't want to go this far. I don't want to see that my Ramana is not real. You know, or some people might say, I don't want to see that my Jesus isn't real. You know, because I don't want to see that, you know. And so something, I don't remember if that was exactly my thought. I think I actually let go of Ramana a long time ago, so I don't think that was it. And I don't remember exactly what my thought was, but there was something in me at the time of this inquiry that as we started to get to, there's nothing here real. I was starting to go, oh, wait, my head's spinning. I don't want to see this. I was starting to get into, I don't want to see this. And that's because what's occurring here is a real seeing. It's not a believing. I was starting to feel pushed to my limit by the inquiry. So the inquiry takes a break. And it says, there is a holding back here. And I said, yes. Yes. And so the inquiry asks, what is the cause of the holding back? So now it's asking me to take this awareness that it invites, and instead of placing the light of awareness on the question about whether the world is real or not, it's asking me to take that same awareness now and put it on, why are you afraid to continue? You know, you can almost imagine your awareness like a flashlight, and the awareness can be put on one thing or it can be put on another, and the inquiry is guiding the awareness to the place that it's most helpful to be shining right now. So what is the cause of the holding back? It would not be helpful if the inquiry continued to push in the direction of the world is not real when I started to feel I'm not comfortable with this. So the inquiry had the wisdom to pull back from that questioning and now turn the light on the block. What's the cause holding this back? Why? Right? Why don't we want to go on? Let's look at this with awareness. Let's look at this with clarity, because this obstacle needs to be removed. So my answer, in spite of the clear seeing when this reasonable logic is followed, because right, I've already admitted that it was clear and reasonable, the questioning, in spite of the clear seeing when this reasonable logic is followed, there is some unwillingness to state fully that the world is an appearance like a dream. Basically, you've got me like a kid dug in saying, I do not want to accept this. There's got to be more meaning to the world than there is to a nighttime dream. That's what I'm saying. I don't even notice yet that this is an attachment. I don't even notice yet that what's hidden in here is my world. My world, my existence, my home, my what I have knowledge of, my. I'm not willing to say that this thing that is mine is not real. Next, the questioning asks, is there total unwillingness? The answer, no. No, I can't say that. When I look within, I can't find total unwillingness. There's a huge stubbornness here, but it's not total. There isn't total unwillingness. Why isn't there total unwillingness? Because seeing is occurring, and it can't be denied. I can't deny the clarity that has come to me, actual, real clarity, in the last few weeks of this questioning. And because I know that what it's showing me is real, I'm experiencing it directly myself, even though there's a huge resistance right now, I can't stop. Because if I stop, I'm going to know that I quit on reality. I'm going to know that I was like the guy in The Matrix. Do you remember the guy in The Matrix who knew what reality was, but then he was having a meeting with someone and they were eating steak and drinking wine, and he said he wished he didn't know reality. He wanted to believe again that his steak was real. Do you remember that? Well, if I quit now, I'm going to be like him. I'm going to be consciously choosing to believe an illusion. I mean, there was one thing when I believed the illusion fully because questioning had never kicked in. Then I just believed it because I did. But now too much questioning has happened. If I stop now and I go back to believing the world, it's not going to be a full belief anymore. There's going to be a conscious knowing that I'm lying to myself, a conscious knowing that I'm avoiding something, and that's going to eat at me. I can't be happy believing the world anymore because too much seeing has already occurred. Real seeing. I have to go on. It must be investigated further. So in spite of my resistance, in spite of my unwillingness, I need to keep going on this path. And so then the inquiry asks, so the questioning may continue. Again, asking for my permission to go where I almost don't want to go. The key word there is almost. Almost don't want to go, which means that truly I do want to go there. I'm just experiencing resistance in the process. I said, yes, I give questioning permission to continue at a pace that is perfect for additional seeing and opening up. Now what's happening here is I'm trusting the questioning itself. I'm trusting that the questioning will not push me so far into what I'm not ready to see that I close up and stop. I'm trusting the questioning to know the pace that is perfect. If we have to go slower for a while, we'll go slower for a while. In fact, I remember writing a post in Facebook around this time that what was happening with me and the resistance that I was hitting in the questioning reminded me of hiking. You know, when you're out hiking a mountain, some parts of the mountain aren't that steep, and you hike along at a pretty good clip. But then you come to a part that's really steep, and you can't hike the steep part of the mountain at the same pace that you hiked the more level parts or the less steep parts. So when you get to the steeper part of the mountain, you continue to climb, but you climb at a slower pace. So what I'm trusting is that the inquiry will know when I need to slow down in order to continue forward, and when it's okay to go quickly because there isn't as much resistance. So I give questioning permission to continue at a pace that is perfect for additional seeing and opening up. This is a statement that willingness is greater than unwillingness. This is my own acknowledgement. And I'll tell you, my resistance here was very strong at this point, very, very strong. So what I'm doing in stating that willingness is greater than unwillingness is I'm stating that in spite of this strong resistance that I feel, I acknowledge that I want to awaken more. Acknowledge that I want to continue into clear seeing more than all of this resistance that I'm feeling. And then I said, thank you. Thank you. So let's scroll down and let's click on number 444. Hi, Jamie. Number 444 from Yoga Vasistha. You are a knower. whether you know something or do not, remain free from doubt. When you realize that you are the unborn infinite consciousness, then all ignorance and foolishness cease, and this world appearance ceases. You are a knower. Whether you know something or not, remain free from doubt. That's the key right there. Whether you have the direct experience of it or not right now, remain free from doubt. When you realize that you are the unborn, infinite consciousness, then all ignorance and foolishness cease, and this world appearance ceases. All right, let's look at the journal. Now, notice the inquiry has taken a break. What's happening now, instead of the inquiry, is contemplation until realization occurs. And that is different than the inquiry. It's actually, for me, it feels more gentle. It feels more gentle than the actual inquiry. The inquiry is really kind of pushing me along into seeing. The relaxing, contemplate until I see, is a slower pace feel for me. So this is a realization that comes out of contemplation instead of an inquiry. But here is the realization that came from contemplating 444. Doubt has arisen. Doubt should not be denied. Doubt is not shameful. But you, referring to myself, are not the doubter. Look at what you know. Stay fixed on what you know. And all doubt shall fade from sight as true knowledge rises over the horizon of your dreams. So this is telling me to stay focused on what I know. Know is the key word there. Well, what do I know? Well, the one thing that I know, and nobody can talk me out of it because I know it so directly, is that I don't want to say I exist, because I don't want to imply that Regina exists. That's not what I know. I know that there is a presence here that is what I am, that exists. I know that. Even the false idea of Regina had to be laid on top of something. If there wasn't a foundation on which false ideas could apparently become alive, then false ideas could not apparently become alive. There has to be a foundation that is life for even falseness to appear to exist. Something gives it its appearance. Something allows it. So I know that existence is present here. Isness is. That I know. One thing I know. And not only that, I've always known this. I may have told you guys this story before, but when I was a brand new course student, brand spanking new, I heard about some guy named Ken Wapnick. And I downloaded some book of his that he had on his website that he was giving out free that month. And I started reading his book. I didn't get very far into it all. And this guy named Ken Wapnick, who I actually wasn't ready for yet, started to say, "You do not exist." Now, of course, he was referring to the ego, the Regina. But when I was reading, "You do not exist," I wasn't even hearing it as the Regina. I was hearing it as if he was talking to my isness itself. And because I've always been the kind of person who tries to be the good student, that's a part of the personality, I was trying to wrap my head around how could it be that even the isness isn't present? How could it be that the isness isn't? And as I started to reach in this direction, this was the first time that I ever heard Holy Spirit. Holy Spirit popped up and said, "Close the book. The one thing you do know is that you exist." So what I was trying to do, I was trying to take what Ken was teaching, but I was mixing it with the one thing I knew, the one thing I've always known, with my only pure and real knowledge. And I was trying to throw away pure and real knowledge. And Spirit stopped me in my tracks, said, no, no, that's not right. That's not the direction I intend for you to go. That's not helpful. And now here Spirit is saying, take that one thing that you have always known, and stay fixed on that. Just the isness, just the presence, just the beingness that is clearly somehow, for lack of better words, here. Or else not even the false could appear to be, right? If you stay focused on that, doubt, all doubt is going to disappear, and knowledge is going to begin to rise over the horizon of your dreams. Stay fixed on that which you know. All right, let's scroll down and click on 445A. First, I will read 445 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. All these worlds, etc., come into being and cease to be as notions and nothing more. Consciousness does not undergo any change in all these. In consciousness, there is no experience of pleasure or pain, nor does a notion arise in it as, this I am. Now, one thing I didn't tell you guys a moment ago, but it came into my mind to say it, I just didn't, but I'll say it now, is up until the day when I read that line, you do not exist, in Ken Wapnick's book, I never thought about existing. That was the birth for me, that day was the birth for me of thinking about existing. What's interesting is that up until that point, I knew it without thinking about it, which shows that knowledge and thinking have nothing to do with each other. I never once before that day had the thought, I exist, what is my existence? Never, not a single thought, and yet I knew it to be. Jamie Lane here, you know, I don't know exactly what her experience is, but I assume her experience is just that. She has a knowing of existence, a knowing she exists. Jamie, by the way, is my dog, for those of you who don't know. She's a knowing she exists, but she never thinks about it. Somehow, when we get on this spiritual path, we start thinking about our existence. But the knowledge existed before the thinking about it ever occurred. That's how perfect knowledge is. It doesn't require thinking. So again, all these worlds, etc., come into being and cease to be as notions and nothing more. Consciousness does not undergo any change in all these. In consciousness, there is no experience of pleasure or pain, nor does a notion arise in it as this I am. All right, so let's look at 445A. And here we have a light inquiry. One question. Inquiry is asking me, what is known? And this I already explained to you. Existence is here. It is present. It is. It never changes. It is always present without change, even as the world and body experience flux and change enormously. Now with that, I actually want to play another Christmas song. This is bringing in a wonderful song that I want to play for you. Let me hop over to YouTube. This is a song called Where Are You Christmas? The interesting thing about this particular song is if you listen to the words to this song very, very carefully. Whoops, hello. If you listen to the words to this song very, very carefully. That's all right. When they're being sung, she talks about how she changes. And she, at first she's asking Christmas, because I've changed, have you abandoned me? That would be like us asking our existence, our isness, have you abandoned me because I've changed? And all you have to do is look at that inquiry to realize you have not abandoned me. It doesn't matter whether I'm happy. It doesn't matter whether I'm sad. It doesn't matter whether I'm healthy, whether I'm sick, whether the dog hits me in the nose, which is, I think just happened to Jasmine, and I'm feeling pain, or whether I don't feel pain. It doesn't matter whether I seem to be, quote, bad in my opinion or good in my opinion. It doesn't matter whether I'm rich, whether I'm poor. It doesn't matter how I change. The isness does not leave. And that's what she ends up singing. Of course, she's using the word Christmas. But she ends up talking about how Christmas is always here. All right, so why don't we listen to this song for a moment, just to emphasize the teaching.
where are you, Christmas? Fill your heart with love.
All right, so again, what is known? Existence is here. It is present. It is. It never changes. It is always present without change, even as the world and body experience flux and change enormously. Right, that's what's known. So, oh, I hear the same song playing upstairs right now. They must have heard me playing it down here and started to play it up there. We're Christmas song fanatics in this house this month. So let's click on 445B. Now again, 445B is just additional clarity based on 445, and it looks like the inquiry is kicking in a little more. But let's read 445 again. All these worlds, etc., come into being and cease to be as notions and nothing more. Consciousness does not undergo any change in all these. In consciousness, there is no experience of pleasure or pain, nor does a notion arise in it as this I am. All right, so 445B, which I don't think I gave you the link. Let me do that. Not as good at my link giving today as I usually am. All right, 445B. What is the cause of local experience of I am this person or I see from this body mind? So here we have the inquiry has clicked in again, and it's inviting awareness to look and find the answer. What is the cause of this local experience of I am this person or I see from this body mind? The answer, attachment to this as what I am, is the cause of local experience. And this has been seen before through previous inquiry that, in fact, I think I talked about it, maybe it was last night, that if I believe I am this body mind, then my interpretation is that I have life, not that I am life. I, the body-mind, which is what I identify with, has life. And the flip side of that is, what I have, I can lose. And this is where the idea of death comes in. That when this body-mind, which by the way will end, when this body and this personality mind end, then the thought is, I have died. So what you have, you can lose. But if I am life, then I continue even after the body mind ends, right? That's the shift that needs to happen, is that shift in identification. That's the ultimate miracle, that shift. So the reason I seem to experience, you know, myself as a local separate being, I'm this person, I see from this body mind, is actually because I'm attached to this as what I am. It's this attachment that needs to be undone. And so now, the inquiry says, look at what is known. Turn your attention, your awareness, right now, and look at what is known. Is I am this a part of what is known? Even in this moment, I felt a blown out of myself awareness. It occurred even now. Only for, you know, like if we were to time it, it lasted a couple of seconds. And then I came right back to my identification. But just in asking me to look at what is known, and I told you, I do know what is known. asking me just to look at it and then to ask, is I am this a part of what is known? I can see so clearly that I am this is not there. And in the instance that I'm looking at it, my awareness is fully focused on what's known, on the true self. And I'm fully focused on it and I inquire into it, is I am this there? And I see no. For at least a couple of moments, I have this, I don't know what else to call it, but a blown out experience. I'm no longer the local. It's a blown out experience because there is no this. Only the idea of I am this keeps me feeling like I am this. That's the point. And that point isn't just being made in words. It's being made through direct experience with me. If I think I am Regina, I experience myself as Regina. If I think I am this body, I experience myself as this body. But in the couple of instances when inquiry is fully focused on the true self and is looking at it to see if there is an I am this there, if that thought even exists there, and the absolute clarity that comes with the inquiry is looking right at it and finding no I am this thought, in those instances, when there is no I am this thought, there's this blown out experience. And then I quickly return to the I am this thought. In fact, you know how it comes back? It comes back, I am this, having a blown out experience, and it's over. So it only lasts instants, but it's the inquiry that allows it to last even those instants. But as soon as the thought, I am this, having a blown out experience, it's over. So what this proves, absolutely proves, is that the only reason I have an experience as a local or separate individual is because of a thought that I'm attached to. I am this. And I'm so attached to it that even just now, when for two or three times in a row, I went into that clarity and I looked and I couldn't find I am this and I had the experience, then I quickly returned to I am this. I am this, having the experience. And in that, it ended. So without the thought, there was not a local experience. As soon as the thought returned, the local experience returned. Betsy is saying she can't hear me. How's everyone else? I see a mic. Can anyone else hear me? Dove hears me. Okay, good. Okay, I'll continue then. Jay hears me. Good. Thank you. All right, so again, what is the cause of local experience of I am this person or I see from this body mind? It's definitely attachment. Like I said, I was without it for a couple of seconds and went right back to it. So what else would you call that but attachment? It's attachment to this as what I am. That's the cause of local experience. Look at what is known. Is I am this a part of what is known? And the answer, of course, is no, it is not a part of what is known. I mean, even again, just now, all I have to do is look. Look at existence, look for the thought, and in the instant that I'm seeing there is no thought, there's this blown out experience. And then in the instant I have the thought, I am having a blown out experience, it's gone. And so look at what wisdom says. Stay fixed on what is known. Do not be swayed from knowledge. Because that's all that's happening here, is I'm not staying fixed on what is known. I'm returning to the perceptual belief that I am this. If I would just stay fixed on what is known, there would not be a local experience, a separate experience. It could not exist without the thought. All right, let's scroll down. And we will click on 446, which I am also putting in the room as a link. Four 46 from Yoga Vasistha says, there is the unreal experience of this world and what is known as the other world, though all these are false. So the other world here, I'm not sure what he's talking about. Maybe he's talking about like a heavenly type world or a hell type world or a alternate universe or another planet. These are all ideas of other worlds. Right? There is the unreal experience of this world and what is known as the other world, though all these are false. So even those other world ideas, you know, another dimension, heaven, hell, right? Other planets as life, all equally false, he's saying. None of them are true. All right, let's look at the journal. All right. All projection is unreal. We saw this last night and we saw this again today. All projection is unreal. Projection of mind is unreal. Intuitive projection is unreal also. So we've seen this, we've looked at this, and now we're being given this as a summation thought to contemplate and to hold on to and to remember, so that we do not get confused that which is helpful is also real, because that's not true. That which is helpful is equally illusory, but we also don't want to get confused because it's illusory, we should ignore it. That's not true. It's equally illusory, but it is helpful. There is an intuitive projection that points towards truth, and we are to follow it without believing it. That's what we heard in NTI. Follow it, but don't believe it. But as long as it's useful, stay with it. When it's not useful, let it go, right? All right, let's see. I don't know what the next one is. I don't know if we have time for another one. But let's scroll down and click on number 447, see if it's short or long. It's short, so why don't we do 447? 447 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. He who does not abandon his confirmed conviction in the existence of diversity is not abandoned by sorrow. In other words, if I insist in believing in the world, I will suffer from that belief. If not today, someday. He who does not abandon his confirmed conviction in the existence of diversity is not abandoned by sorrow. All right, let's look at the journal. One who is determined that his beliefs are true cannot be free of belief in projection. And now an inquiry. Is there firm belief here? You remember, a couple of inquiries ago, maybe three posts ago, we saw that I was experiencing great resistance to fully accepting there is no world. There is no world. The world does not exist. So now I'm being asked, is there firm belief in the world? Are you one who will not abandon your confirmed conviction in the existence of diversity? Is that the stand you want to take? It reminds me again of something that's in NTI Matthew. I don't remember the exact words, but it's something like, you know, do I absolutely insist, or will my faith rest on the belief in death? It's something like that. Will my faith rest on the belief in death, or am I willing to believe in. I think it said love and one and something else. Do I insist in believing that this current experience that I have as Regina in a world, teaching on a technology to other people, do I want to insist that this is actually true? Is there a firm belief here? And I said, no, there is no longer firm belief. It is seen that this type of certainty is foolish. So again, just like I mentioned earlier, for me to go back to saying I want to believe my stake is real, there's been too much seeing that's occurred. I can't actually go back to that point. So it would be conscious lying to myself. Before, when I believed the world, there wasn't a conscious lying to myself. I believed it. But now too much seeing has occurred through inquiry. I can't go back to belief. Not once the light has been let in. Not once the dark wall has been cracked and the light is shining in. I can't pretend like there's just a dark wall there anymore. That would be foolish. So again, I'm giving my permission for the inquiry to continue by saying this. And so we'll continue to look at this inquiry next Sunday night. Everybody, have a happy Christmas Eve and a Merry Christmas until I see you tomorrow. I will be here at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for a Christmas address. I don't know what that is, but I know I want to be here. So I'll see you then. And goodbye.